And hello, everybody, and welcome to episode number 112 of Radio Free Asgard, the only Thor podcast hosted by a true descendant of Odin. We're a proud member of the Comics Podcast Network. Welcome along to the show, coming to you from hot and humid Chicago, Illinois. My name is Tom Harrison, and I'm the host, of course, because who else would be talking but the host? All right, so we have a little bit of a different show for you this week. We're going to be doing a review later in the show, but first we're going to have a little bit of discussion. Obviously, you're going to get a lot of my commentary during the course of the show, but if you feel like weighing in on this topic, please feel free to email the show. The email address is radiofreeasgard@gmail.com, and you can also comment on the thread on our Facebook group. And what prompted this was an article that was cross-posted to a number of different places on Facebook. One of the places it was cross-posted to, of course, was the Radio Free Asgard Facebook group. And the author of this article is our good friend Manuel Carmona, who not only has appeared on this show before, but is the author of the Truthful Comics blog and co-host of the very good Truthful Comics podcast. And he asked for feedback regarding this particular topic. So I'm going to read the article, and then afterwards I'll have a few thoughts of my own on the topic. So this article was posted on July 7th of 2013, and is entitled The Importance of Strong Female Lead Characters in Comics. I feel like I should have a malfunctioning smoke detector in the background. Sorry, Manuel. For a long time, I've been trying to find comic books that are not only appropriate for kids, but also challenge and provide good role models for them. As I embarked on this journey, I came to the realization that most cartoons and movies are directed towards boys, and that young girls are in dire need of strong role models, especially in comic books, cartoons, and movies. So I made it a point to look for, study, and expose young girls to these strong, independent female characters that they should be following on a regular basis. If you ask any random person or any casual comic book reader what strong, independent female character they can think of for young girls to follow, the answers might be Natasha Romanoff, aka the Black Widow, mostly because of her role in Iron Man and the Avengers movies, Barbara Gordon, also known as Batgirl, mostly for her role in the Adam West Batman TV series, and last but not least, the warrior princess of the Amazons, Wonder Woman. That's a very short list compared to what this list would look like if it was male lead characters in comic books, right? The reality is that there are far too many female characters that simply don't get the exposure or the respect they deserve as legitimate characters with an established history. And it simply boggles the mind as to why exactly this happens. I can name many strong, independent female characters in comics that could be great role models for young girls, but simply don't get the push from their respective publishers, or at least I don't feel like they do enough to promote their books to the masses like they do with their male counterparts, such as Batman, Green Lantern, Superman, etc. I feel it is my duty as a comic book fan to little PR to those characters that I feel are deserving of the public's money and attention, especially that of young girls. Now, if you ask me to name a few of these strong female characters I keep talking about off the top of my head, my list would look a little something like this, in no particular order. Abby Chase, Danger Girl. Aurora Monroe, Storm. The Valkyrie. Helena Wayne, aka The Huntress. Sarah Pazzini, Witchblade. Kitty Pryde. Dinah Laurel Lance, Black Canary. Stephanie Brown, Batgirl. I knew Stephanie Brown was going to enter into this somewhere. Barbara Gordon, Batgirl. Misty Knight, Kara Zor-El, Supergirl, Sue Storm, the Invisible Woman, Princess Leia Organa, Renee Montoya, The Question, Kate Kane, Batwoman, Karen Starr, Power Girl, Shanna, the She-Devil, Carol Danvers, Captain Marvel. I truly believe that young girls need positive role models more now than ever. Think about it. What role models do they have? Beyoncé, who only performs in skimpy outfits and all she does is shake her ass for the camera? Rihanna, who grabs her crotch more than Michael Jackson used to do? Or maybe Lady Gaga, Well, you get the idea. Young girls need to read about strong, positive, and independent female characters. And in my opinion, there's no better character suited for that task than the beautiful Asgardian goddess of war known in the Nine Realms as Lady Sif. Lady Sif was created by Jack Kirby and Stan Lee. Well, not really. And her first appearance was in Journey into Mystery 102, March 1964. As a supporting character of Thor, Sif was featured predominantly through the pages of The Mighty Thor, beginning with issue number 136, January 1967. The character went on to make guest appearances in several series, including The Avengers, Fantastic Four, The New Mutants, Silver Surfer, and Thunderstrike. In June 2010, Sif starred in a self-titled one-shot by writer Kelly Sue DeConnick and artist Ryan Stegman. The issue deals with the aftermath of Loki having taken control of her body and her consciousness being forced into the frame of a dying elderly woman. DeConnick said, "Well, this is pretty much the story of how she deals with that. She was a bit cowed at first, and for a woman as fierce and proud as Sif, that's insult added to injury. This is the story of how she comes to own that fury and rises to her full stature once again." Beginning with issue number 646, November 2012, Journey into Mystery by Catherine Immonen and Valerio Schiti shifted focus from Loki to Lady Sif. Editor Lauren Sankovich said, "We had it Loki-centric. Going forward with 646, we decided to mix it up a little bit. Lady Sif's been in the thick of it. She's a born warrior. She's got a lot of fight and verve and fire to her." "You're damn right, Lady Sif's been in the thick of it, Lauren. And this journey is just getting started. I have to say, though, what Catherine Immonen and Valerio Schiti are doing with Journey into Mystery, book could only be described with one word. Magical. With this current Journey into Mystery run, they've taken Lady Sif in a bold new direction that even I couldn't have predicted, and how sweet it is. Each story is lovingly crafted by every member of this creative team, and it absolutely shows. The new storyline involves Asgardian berserker warriors fighting giant mythical monsters, traveling to Midgard, Earth, through some sort of wormhole, Lady Sif being overwhelmed by bloodlust after receiving Arnid's berserker spell, following the berserkers and the creatures to Midgard, and encountering a familiar web crawler who happens to be curious as to why the Asgardians are destroying his city. I mean, seriously, how is this book not on everybody's pull list? In this new Journey into Mystery run, Lady Sif is portrayed as funny, courageous, independent, powerful, and she's sexy without being slutty or without having to resort to any gratuitous TNA. Talk about a breath of fresh air. Another thing I really enjoy about Sif is that even though she loves Thor and she respects him as a man, she's outspoken, she demands respect, and she's her own woman, something that the mighty Thor truly admires of her. Just interjecting here, I think that's something you can thank Walter Simonson for. For the record, young ladies, real men admire women who are like that. It's a great thing that you love your man, or woman for that matter, but you should love yourselves first and foremost. You should demand respect, and you should do your own thing. Make your own money if possible, because real men love strong and independent women, just like Thor loves and respects Lady Sif. I think young ladies can learn a great deal from a powerful female character like Lady Sif, and many others throughout the comic book world. But it's our duty to introduce girls to such amazing characters and stories. Our duty. So if you have a young lady in your life and you want to provide good reading material for her, good strong female role models to follow and have fun with, introduce her to Journey into Mystery 646 and up. Or maybe you can browse your comic shop for these titles. Batgirl, Batwoman, World's Finest, Birds of Prey, Fearless Defenders, Wonder Woman, Supergirl, Witchblade, Danger Girl, X-Men, and many more. If you have any thoughts on this article, please leave your comments below and thanks for reading. Sincerely, Manuel. So I do have a few thoughts about this. Now, I think that Manuel now is weighing into a discussion that's been ongoing in organized fandom for a very, very long time. I can remember having discussions about this as early as the 1970s. And I'm hardly the most savvy when it comes to organized fandom. I'm just sort of on the outskirts here as a podcaster and not really as an active collector anymore. But the idea of having strong female characters, I think it's a popular idea, and I think that it really started to take off in the 1970s and has continued on, I think, fairly progressively from there into the present day. Now, there's a few things that I want to point out here, and that is, if you want to present a strong role model for young girls, I don't know if comic books are necessarily the best place to go. At least not superhero comics. Now, I don't think that that's necessarily because these characters aren't good, because a lot of them are good. Who could argue that Wonder Woman or Sif is not a great character, or an arguably a good role model for a girl? But I think it's not so much, like I said, the fault of the character, but the fault of the male creators that dominate the profession. In Manuel's article, he posts a lot of photos, or not photos, but pictures, illustrations of these characters. And they're all beautiful illustrations. I have to say, artistically, they're very good. But they, almost all of them have something in common. They're showing off either the ass or the tits of the female characters involved. And this is a big problem if you want to appeal to female readers. Because I don't think that female readers are interested in female TNA, at least not most of them. In my experience, female comic readers, and there's a lot of them out there, tend to be more interested in a good character, and not so much in the visual aspect of this sexy female character. You can go to any comic convention and you will be just overwhelmed by just the sheer slutitude of it all. And it doesn't matter how good these characters are, if they're being portrayed in a sexist fashion, that's what's going to come across. I want to make it very clear here. A lot of that has to do with the demographic of your average comic reader. Your average comic reader is a young male heterosexual. They like to look at TNA. And so you get an amazing amount of that in the comics. And even comics that aren't necessarily TNA books, like Wonder Woman, that's still a big part of the appeal for a male fan. And don't get me wrong, I don't think there's anything particularly wrong with TNA. I think that it's okay. I think there's a place for it. I just don't think that every place in the comics world is the place for it. And to somebody coming in from the outside, say a young girl who thinks Wonder Woman is kind of cool, or maybe she really likes the Teen Titans Go cartoon and is interested in Starfire and Raven from that, she's going to walk into a comic shop and she's going to see the new 52 Starfire and think, oh my God, what am I getting into here? That kind of constant barrage of the sex imagery and the violence imagery might not really be something that's going to interest a young girl. I think the way to grab female readers is going to be through damn good stories. Not even necessarily good characters, but good character development. Good stories, well-told stories, stories that respect the intellect of the reader. And unfortunately, you're not going to get rid of the TNA in comics. You're not going to get rid of the violence in comics. So you want to have strong enough characterization that a female reader isn't going to be repulsed by that more than they're attracted by a good story, good characterization. That's a really tough act. I think that there's a few creators out there who are capable of doing that. I think Gail Simone on Birds of Prey. I think there's a lot of people out there who probably are underrated as storytellers who are capable of telling a story like that. Now, another aspect of this is that I think that the further you get away from the superhero genre, the easier it is to find properties like this. You can look at Neil Gaiman, who has written very strong female characters, particularly, I think, in books like Sandman. And I seem to recall Sandman having a pretty big female reader base when you compare it to most superhero comics. Now, when you're talking about children, as opposed to teenagers and young adults, then it becomes a little bit easier, because there actually are a lot of more fun characters, I think, that appeal to both boys and girls. I think you'll look at anything like Tiny Titans or maybe the I, Little Pony comic from IDW, which definitely has both male and female appeal. So anyway, those are just a few of my thoughts. Now, like I said, this is a discussion that's been going on for decades, and I don't think that really there's any easy answers here. Just one last little small tangent before we wrap up this discussion and move on to our review. Manuel lists a number of characters here, and of that list, there's a number that I would probably characterize as being more TNA characters than not. Witchblade? Come on. That's like my definition of a TNA character. You know, I don't know what the stories are like nowadays, but I sure remember when that character was first introduced, that book was all about the boobs. And, you know, even a character like Power Girl, who has been portrayed with varying, you know, degrees of success over the years, has been a character who's mainly defined by her breasts. And I don't necessarily see those as great role model type characters, but it really depends on how this character is handled. I think you could get, you know, Raggedy Ann and make her a positive role model in a comic book, but it really depends on who's writing the character, how the character is handled, whether the character is treated respectfully, whether the reader is treated respectfully by the way the character is portrayed. I think you can take any female character in comics, you know, from Dumb Bunny from the Inferior Five all the way to Jean Grey as the Phoenix, and you know, bring something good out of that character if one has the will and the talent to be able to do it. Do I have the will and talent to do it? No. but I have no doubt that there are people out there who could. Now, I am, you know, not trying to cause a disagreement here with Manuel. I think Manuel is honorably intentioned. I think he has a great point. I think that really role models for girls is something that our society should be looking into. There's a lot of real life role models that we can point girls to and not have to deal with the comic book world at all. And maybe I'm, you know, it's because I'm kind of on the edge of the comic book world that I'm thinking more in that way. There's nothing wrong with Batgirl. There's nothing wrong with Wonder Woman. There's nothing wrong with any of these characters. A lot of them are great characters. Maybe, like I said, comic books are not the place where you really want to look for role models. I would like to see in the comic world, I would like to see properties being developed that really would appeal to all readers, men and women. And just have, you know, damn good writing and damn good art. And I think that's the way you're going to find the appeal. Whatever the hot heroine of the moment is, in this case, you know, you're talking about the Black Widow. Maybe we'll be talking about the Wasp in a couple years after Avengers 2. I don't know. But there's always that potential. Any of these characters can break out given the right creator at any time. And I think that that's something that we, as fans, should be demanding from the major companies and you know, not maybe the not so major companies as well. And as creators, I think that should be one of the goals that creators have when they're creating new properties. Remember, women is, you know, just over 50% of the population. You tap into the female market, you can make, you know, comics live on for years to come. And comics is a dying medium, folks. Let's not get ahead of ourselves here and pretend that the comics are in some kind of golden age, because they're not. And I think part of the reason why it isn't is, A, well, there's a lot of other entertainment options that take that away, but also the way half the population is treated in comics. Anyway, so those are just my thoughts. I have my own point of view. Your point of view may vary. Now, of course, people who have different point of view, please feel free to contact the show. The email address once again is radiofreeasgard@gmail.com. I will be happy to read out your answers on the air, and maybe we'll get some response to this. I don't know. But I think that the key here for, you know, good female role models in comics is to actually put out good comics that have female characters in them, and not necessarily superhero comics, because I don't necessarily think that kind of violence and that kind of thing is necessarily going to appeal to female readers. I guess that's kind of the point that I'm trying to make here anyway. So I do apologize for being so long-winded about that. Yeah, it's almost like I'm doing an episode of Tom Harris USA, TomHarrisUSA.com, rather than a Radio Free Asgard episode. But, you know, every once in a while you have to get in a good rant. And with that being said, this is Radio Free Asgard, and we do have an issue of Thor to cover. So let's go ahead and move on to our review.
Cross the rainbow bridge of Asgard, where the booming heavens roar. You'll behold in breathless wonder the God of Thunder, mighty Thor.
So this week, to nobody's great surprise, I'm sure, we're going to be covering Thor number 10. Cover art is by Johnny Romita Jr. and Claus Janssen. Actually, I'm really liking the covers on these last few issues. Not so much because of the art itself, but because the coloring has been really, really good on these. There's almost a painterly quality to these covers. It's something that I really enjoy. Cover art shows Thor and looming behind him, getting ready to, looks like, to bash his head in, is none other than the dark god Perakis. Ooh. And we open up to the splash page where we see Perakis, and he is in Asgard, being followed around by Tuckets. I'm going to go ahead and just do the credits now. Dan Jurgens wrote this. Johnny Romita Jr. and Claus Janssen were the artists. Gregory Wright and Kevin Summers did the colors. Richard Starkings of Comicraft did the lettering. Tom Brevoort was the editor. And Bob Harras was the editor-in-chief. The story is called The Dark Wars, Part 1 of 3. So Perakis is in Asgard. He's being followed around by Tuckets. And Tuckets has this to say. News for you I've come to give. The son of Odin does yet live. Battle him on earth I surely did. From our eyes he hath been hid. And Perakis is just as annoyed with Tuckets as we are. Still your tongue, lest I slice it out, Tuckets. If Thor is on earth, I'll be grinding my heel into his face within the hour. And he calls out to Advil, or Adva. It's like, Adva, as master of the Continuum Gate, you can access all worlds and planes of existence. Show me the dung heap called Earth. Reveal the Odin Sun to me. And Adva is standing there in this purpley glow. It's a kind of cool panel, actually. Glowing purpley, and she shoots this sort of purple ray. And you see an image, apparently, of Earth. I'm not quite sure what we're looking at here. It looks like a bunch of Rice Krispies or something. And she says, in mere seconds, I can scan every Earth and life form as I had done for you so often, to little avail. Wait, is that? No, for the briefest of moments I thought I had glimpsed him, but now he's vanished. How is such a thing possible? And we have the splash page here. I've already read the credits. And we see Thor, and he is changing back into Jake Olsen, banging his hammer on the ground. Very sketchy splash page here, but the composition's nice anyway. And Thor, of course, is monologuing, as he often does. Now that I have returned from the land where Orichal dwells, let the power of enchanted Mjolnir remove the body of Thor from the placid soul of Midgard fair. And with a fashash, he changes back, and he changes back into Jake Olsen, of course, in the obligatory deserted alleyway. And we see the ghostly form of Marnot, apparently spying on Olsen. And Marnot says, good to see you remember your human obligations. Our pact endures.
Marnot, your manipulations may have forced me into this mortal shell, but that doesn't mean you can intrude wherever you want. I am honored bound to live out Olsen's life, and shall do so, but not at the expense of Asgard. My beloved home has been overrun by forces of evil, and I shall make war upon them, as soon as I have made the proper excuses for Olsen.
You cannot hope to achieve victory over the Dark Gods on your own.
So, you do know more than you've let on. For all I know, you're one of them.
Our bargain demands you safeguard Olsen's life. I won't allow you to wade into a foolish conflict that will ensure your death.
Just as my honor obligates me to you, so does it obligate me to the well-being of Odin, and...
And apparently he's saying this a little bit louder than just whispering it to himself. We have Demetrius overhear him and says, who are you screaming at, Jake?
Demetrius, what's up, partner?
Your temper from the sounds of it.
Just talking to myself. You know how it is.
Not really. Ready to hit the salt mines?
I'm taking the day off, D. Personal business to take care of.
Again? You trying to get fired or what?
And Hannah comes up and says, arguing about who gets to drive the ambulance, gentlemen. And we have Marna is kind of whispering in Jake Olsen's ear, though apparently nobody else can hear him but Jake. And Jake is explaining to Hannah what's going on here.
Just telling D that I'm leaving town for a couple of days, Hannah.
Why are you...
It's complicated, honey. I'll tell you later. Be good till I get back.
And Jake goes running off. And Han's like, what was that all about? The man gets more mysterious every day. We have the police officer that we saw last issue comes up behind Hannah and says,
Hannah Fairmount, Detective O'Neill, NYPD. Your bosses tell us your drugs are being taken from the hospital pharmacy. If you've noticed any strange or suspicious behavior lately, I need to know. And Demetrius and Hannah look at each other like, ooh, we've seen something weird lately.
We then shift scenes to Asgard and Odin, of course, in his Santa Claus bondage. And he's still kind of trussed up in this big iron machine thing. Looks like he's covered with porcupine quills here. Somebody's been throwing toothpicks at him or something. I don't know what's going on here. Obviously, somebody is torturing Odin using, obviously porcupine quills or something similar.
Your son, Thor, I espied elsewhere, despite the secrets you've declined to share.
And Odin's like,
Tokut, Pericus, Magiston Zelia, must I speaketh again of my son? If it be true that he still doth live, it is a fact unknown to me, for I thought him long dead.
The truth to us he should have sung. Let us now cut out his tongue. I'd rather remove yours, Tockets.
I do find it amusing that Magiston Zelia hates Tockets as much as I do.
Thor lives. We need not know how. Our only need is to bring him here. Pericus!
Yes, Magiston?
You are the god of power, unlimited and energy infinite, more than Thor's equal. Set the trap with proper bait, and he will be ours.
And Pericus goes off to do his evil deeds as we shift back to Earth. And Jake Olsen is running down the street, and looks like there's snow here. I don't remember this being the winter, but I suppose it could be. And he kind of runs around the corner and basically runs right into Jane Foster with a whoomp. And she's like, oof, what's the hurry, Olsen?
Sorry, Dr. Foster. Guess I was in too big of a hurry to notice you.
Emergency somewhere?
Not exactly. Personal business that can't wait.
Family business? Perhaps your father has need of you? You'll have to tell me all about it later. By the way, I had an interesting patient last night. A young man named Sykes, whose arm needed setting. He was running an evil robot until Thor stopped him.
Replicus.
Oh, you have heard of him.
And, like he couldn't be more obvious. Marnot is whispering in Olsen's ear here.
Fool, she suspects. Not a word. Your situation must remain secret.
And we hear a loud voice coming from behind the two of them.
I demand the Odinson!
And the two whirl around, and there's this giant image of Pericus in the air above New York City. It looks like the giant Pericus just kind of towering over everything. And he's calling out Thor, good and proper.
You are a coward, Thunder God. Why else would you hide yourself from Asgard's conquerors?
Who's that? Says Jane.
I don't know.
And we shift back to Asgard, and Tockets is talking to Adva here.
I bring the one Pericus called for, as he attempts to attract Thor.
That's a terrible rhyme.
Bring her into the dimensional tunnel that she might be seen.
The way has been opened to you once again, Thor. Come to me, coward. Come to Asgard for battle proper. Our blood will be spilt.
And he grabs the prone figure from Tockets and holds her up for everybody on Earth to see. And it is the Lady Sif. And Pericus is threatening Sif in front of the entirety of New York City. And Jane Foster is taken aback by this.
My God, Sif? Do you have any idea who those two are? Jake?
And she turns around and Jake, of course, has disappeared. And he's like,
gone. Then my suspicions must be true. Jake Olsen is also...
And she's interrupted by Demetrius, who is inexplicably wearing a Santa hat in this picture, coming up from behind her and says,
Hey, Dr. Foster, you seen Jake? If he keeps ducking out of work like this, he's going to get his butt fired for sure.
Yes, I did see him, Demetrius. Jake said he had a family emergency to take care of. He'll be in touch.
And Hannah seems a little bit jealous here and says,
Well, I wish he would have let me know. Sometimes, Dr. Foster, you seem to know more about Jake than I do.
Hannah, that's just plain silly. Come on, let me buy you a cup of coffee, and you can fill me in on what I don't know about Jake.
That sounds creepy. I have to say that. Tell me all about your boyfriend, Hannah. Oh, that sounds creepy as hell. Anyway, we shift scenes at this point to Thor, who has already changed from his Jake Olsen form and is teleporting himself via the Ajax White Tornado to the Rainbow Bridge. And we get a little bit of monologue here. 'Twas Pericus, whom I did once encounter as a child, who didst hold Butchus Sif. Once more the time hath come for Thor to shed the form of mortal man, and enter the demon Etrigan. And answer the challenge of the gauntlet hurled. So too must I away, as the enchanted vortex of mighty Mjolnir swallows me whole, teleporting me across boundaries of time and space to the rubble of the Rainbow Bridge. Though it's significantly less rubble-like than Walt Simonson left it when he left Thor. And he appears on the bridge. He's like, Heimdall's eyes. Though I did fear the worst upon arrival, yet never did I suspect the golden eternal Asgard, beacon to the entire universe, had been transformed thus. And basically what we've seen in the last few issues, you know, Asgard being all shiny and bright and science fiction-y has been changed into this gray, dingy, cobwebby sort of horror show. Verily, 'tis among the most depressing of sights ever beheld by the god of thunder. And I like the fact that it really doesn't look that different. It just kind of is colored gray and you still have, like, the Kirby space all around and exploding stars and all that stuff. A misty hand is reaching towards Thor, where he's standing on the bridge. And Thor's like, what passing strange sight? A hand, barely more solid than the winds themselves, doth beckon me to follow. Follow I shall, eager to meet those who wouldst harm Milady Sif, and just as eager to defeat them all. And Adva says,
the Odin son is crossed, Pericus, he is here.
After all this time, all these years, the final battle is at hand, says Pericus ominously.
And Thor is kind of walking the streets of Asgard, and there's all these weird plants and mold and looks like lizard creature things. And basically this sort of horrible abominations that have taken over Asgard while these evil gods have taken over. And Thor is talking out loud here.
Zones. Refuse and vermin doth carpet the land. Soiled wastes and the remains of the dead.
He's walking through what looks like shit. Which it probably is.
Methinks it inconceivable that Asgard could be soiled thus.
And he goes into, I guess he's going into Odin's palace, though it's really not clear from the picture. And here's a voice.
Welcome, child.
And he's confronted on the double page spread here with the entirety of the evil pantheon. And there's a big crowd of people, like in bleachers, sitting all around. I don't know if these are the Asgardians, or they're just more of the evil god's followers, or what. I really don't know what's going on here. But anyway, we have the Magistun Zelia, who's kind of floating in the air here. We have Advil, and we have Pericus, and we have Tockets. Zelia's introducing herself.
I am Magistun Zelia, unquestioned supremator of those your kind calls the Dark Gods. Here shall you fight in their name and fall beneath our flag.
I don't see any flags anywhere here, but I do see a giant metal machine, which is Odin's Santa Claus bondage device, and kind of sitting here right in front of Thor. And from this picture, it looks kind of like it has a face. I think I might have said that before, but it kind of does. It looks like there's a head built into this. And Tockets says,
the mask which hid you we have torn, and now you'll die this bloody morn.
And Thor can't really believe what he sees. Odin's tied up. He says, 'Tis unthinkable, an illusion.
Nay, my son, 'tis true indeed, and I bid you flee this den of death anon. Omnipotent Odin, chained is naught but a common criminal. And bravest Balder, near death, even Sif, near ready for Hela's permanent embrace.
Yeah, Balder and Sif are kind of strewn at the base of the giant, you know, metal machine that Odin is being held captive on.
As soon will you be, boy, for the victory you delivered them so long ago. Pericus!
And Pericus comes forward, and he's got his big old scepter thingy in his hand, and he's crackling with blue Kirby crackle. Love the way Johnny Romita Jr. draws Kirby crackle. I think the best since Kirby himself. I mean, it really looks like energy cascading off things. And I know that there have been a lot of people over the years who've tried to do good Kirby crackle. I think most of them have fallen short, from John Buscema all the way up into George Perez. I think that Johnny Romita Jr. rules at Kirby Crackle in a way that a lot of other people don't. Anyway, Pericus is kind of talking smack here.
I call you out, Thunder God, for all those years I suffered in your father's prison, for the years you did cost me. I challenge you until only one of us draws the breath of life.
Yield at Thor's command, while possible, Pericus, or face my righteous wrath.
Never,
says Pericus, and he raises his arm and blasts a big, bright energy blast out of his forearm, almost Ultraman-like. You know how Ultraman did the thing where he crosses his arms? And it kind of looks like that, except he's only using one arm. And Thor's being bombarded by this little bright light beam that's just kind of blasting him. And Thor is fighting against it and making his way towards Pericus through the ray. You would think he'd go around, but yeah, it's a comic and it looks dramatic. And of course, Thor is talking some smack of his own.
Hurl mountain and storm alike. Let loose the fury and rage of all thine ancestors. Still shall your efforts fall low, as mighty Mjolnir doth drink of thine energy. For thou darest challenge Thor, son of Odin, he who fights eternally for honor. For glory, for Asgard!
And he's made his way all the way to Pericus and smacks him with Mjolnir with a giant scrat and knocks Pericus back. And the fight is on. We have another two-page spread here. Thor and Pericus fighting. Pericus is swiping at Thor with his spear sort of scythe thing, and it's kind of hard to tell what this thing is supposed to be, but it seems to have multiple uses, so that makes it automatically kind of cool.
If energy won't stop you, perhaps this will put you to your knees.
And he swipes at Thor, slashes him with his spear thing, cuts Thor's costume open.
Thor kneels to none but Odin.
Really? Even he fell under a barrage of my flesh-piercing darts.
And he's whirling his scepter thing around, and it's shooting out all these quills, like we saw sticking into Odin. Look, they look really painful. But Thor is covered in these things, and he's like,
"'Tis clear indeed that thou shalt carry this to the grimmest of ends. Thus, by the power of my enchanted Uru mallet, do I summon an anti-force that will render thee like unto a helpless babe."
And he holds his hammer up, and with a scowl, he shoots like the fire out of his hammer, like he did a few issues ago, and like we saw him do back in the Journey into Mystery days. And Pericus is being kind of consumed by this yellow fire with a scrack-thoom. But it doesn't seem to slow Pericus down very much, and now the Kirby crackle around him is two different colors. Pericus is like,
"Impressive, Thunder God, but not enough!"
And while Pericus is distracted, Thor flings his hammer, and Thor's like,
"Now, while thou art weakened, let this battle end, for no force, no man can withstand the awesome power and might of the hammer of Thor!"
And he whirls Mjolnir, just whips it right at Pericus, and it's heading right at him. And Pericus takes his axe, and he slashes downward, and with a scrict, slices Thor's hammer in two. Ouch. Now, I guess Thor's going to have to take another trip to Pittsburgh, I guess, to repair this. Anyway, there's a giant choom, and Mjolnir goes crashing to the ground, and there's like lightning shooting everywhere, and sort of this purple energy emerging from the hammer. And we get a little bit of exposition here.
Throughout Asgard's long existence, many unique events have transpired. Birth, death, the eternal contest between good and evil, the ascension and the supremacy of the most benevolent of gods. Asgard has been home to all, even most recently, defeat. Never before, however, has it been home to such a sight as this, a sight so awe-inspiring that it silences all who witness it. The hammer of Thor, carved in two,
is enough to inspire fear. And we have close-ups of everybody's face, and their eyes are really wide, and they look afraid. Yeah, because it's inspiring fear. For this act does more than reveal an opponent's incredible strength. In this new paradigm of existence, it makes one wonder what will happen if the hammer does not remain in Thor's possession. And Pericus doesn't really care what happens. He's like, prepare yourself. Death is nigh. And so he and Thor are fighting hand to hand, and Pericus has got these big old spiky metal gloves on, and he's just whomping Thor and kicking him all over the place. We have another double-page spread here of Pericus and Thor fighting, and we see Magistan Zelia cheering on Pericus, and Odin just sort of glumly watching as Thor is getting the crap beat out of him. And of course, we have more exposition. Agonizing seconds slip away as pure rage transforms itself into a brutal assault. Such is the power, the viciousness, and savagery of the battle that no words are spoken. There is only blow after blow after blow, delivered with an unyielding force that might fell a mountain. While courage, honor, and heroism are enough to keep the God of Thunder standing for a short time, the seconds eventually give way to a full minute. Given that, the transformation begins. The transformation back to Jake Olsen. Though a god might withstand the fierceness for a time, no man can hope to do so. And Odin's watching in wonderment. His zones, what manner of wizardry doth transpire? So he seems just as surprised that this enchantment is back on the hammer as I am. And Pericus doesn't like Odin speaking up, and he kind of backhands him, kind of bitch slaps Odin here. Silence, pig! I'll not have my attention diverted, not when victory is mine. And I got to think, you know, Thor's covered with all these quill things, and wouldn't Pericus hammering on these things kind of stick in his hands too? I don't know. Anyway, Thor is transforming into Jake Olsen very slowly, as seems to be, and he's like, "Nay, this change shouldn't happen. Not here in Asgard. Must protect Olsen." And he's crawling into what looks like a storm drain. It just happens to conveniently be nearby. And it looks like he's crawling through slush to get to the storm drain or cotton or something. And Magistan Zelia is gloating here.
Ha! He fights not with the courage of a lion, but flees with the timidity of a mouse.
And we get Pericus yelling after him.
Odin, son! Return to me here and now, or I'll cut the meat from the bones of all you hold dear!
And we have the next issue blurb, The Storm That Died. And that is Thor, Volume 2, Number 10. Wow, what an interesting issue. Yeah, well, the story is really going here. They're definitely going for shock value in the story. We have Pericus destroying Thor's hammer, and this is not a cliche, I don't think, at this point. I don't think that this has happened a lot. Obviously, it happened back in the 1960s. Thor took his hammer to get repaired, and then he ended up having to take it again during the Simonson run, didn't he? You know, it's not often that Thor's hammer gets damaged, and in this case, it really kind of got sliced in half, and things are not looking good for our hero if he doesn't change back into Thor at this point. Yeah, so obviously, there's something weird going on with the enchantments to the hammer. We obviously have Marnot, or whoever, is interfered with the way the hammer normally works. Because, obviously, if he's in Asgard, he shouldn't be changing back to Jake Olsen or Don Blake or anybody else. So it's not surprising that Odin is a bit surprised at what's going on. Now, as for Marnot, we're going to be finding out more about him, I think, next issue. Maybe the issue after that, because I think next issue is the big conclusion. No, we have two parts more to this story. Thor is not going to be dead next issue. But artwork, generally speaking, it's pretty good. You know, it's not Johnny Ramírez Jr.'s best work. You've got a lot of sketchiness in here, and it's not quite to the level of 1990s sloppiness, but it's not what I would say was one of his better efforts. However, still not bad. Still very much in that style. Still very exciting. Again, I think that Johnny Romita Jr. is a really good artist when it comes to action scenes, and it really shows in this issue. Again, the Kirby crackle, that's a big highlight of this issue for me. I think it's one of my favorite things in this entire issue. Obviously, this is one of those issues that it's mostly a big battle, so it doesn't take very long to summarize. So maybe it's a good thing that I was spending a little bit of time in the beginning of the show talking about something else. All right, so that's it for this episode. And we will continue, of course, with the Dark Gods saga next week. Once again, thanks very much for listening, and we'll see you next week here on Radio Free Asgard.